everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Yes, we are officially in our holiday editions here. If you tuned into the show this past Monday, that was our last new show for 2019. Pretty incredible. That 2019 is already coming to a close. That's something. But so what I thought I'd do is over this holiday break, instead of just kind of completely going off air, completely going silent for the next several weeks or a couple weeks, I guess it's only 2 weeks, that I would just dig into our archives a bit and see if I could find some shows that would kind of make sense to re-release and kind of have kind of like a bonusy feel to them, you know, kind of like a bonus show for the holiday break. And it was actually kind of fun, I have to say. It's like I went back. There's no way I could have reviewed absolutely all the shows, but you know, there's just kind of key moments over the past several years that that seemed to be ripe for kind of return to and kind of see what we were thinking about and how we were talking about stuff at the time. And it was instructive for me, you know. The show that we're going to post today, I'm going to post today, is going to be from 2016, in December 2016, December 14th, 2016. The show was actually called, the title of it was called Winter Is Coming. We're back talking Trumplandia, normalizing white supremacy, and new Raging Chicken contributors. So it gives you a sense of where things were. And it seemed kind of important. Later on, we're going to next week, I think, I'm going to go back and I believe this is kind of what I'm going to end up doing. Don't hold me to it, though, because I could change my mind as I kind of go back and reflect on this stuff. But I wanted to re-release our very first podcast, right? Just so you could kind of hear where we were and kind of where we are now. It was just kind of, that was just kind of cool. So that's probably going to be next week. But this week's show, I wanted to have something that was kind of meaningful and reflecting. I mean, look, it might be cliche, but at the end of every year, I tend to do that kind of reflecting thing, right? You know, thing that you're supposed to do. I mean, I was the kid that, like, you know, thought really a lot about the past year and, you know, made New Year's resolutions and all that kind of stuff in a very earnest way when I was, you know, when I was young. And that's still kind of stuck with me. And even though I don't, you know, whatever, really care how much the ball drops or not at this point, I still do end up kind of reflecting on kind of where I've been, where I want to go. And, you know, part of that is, look, I'm an academic, so, you know, a semester ends and there's, you know, a few weeks of holiday and respite before you start the next semester. So you're preparing anew for a new class of students that are coming in. And so I think that's kind of built into an academic calendar in some ways. But I don't know. So I was going back and thinking over what we could say, and there was a couple things that, a couple moments, obviously over the past several years that have really stuck out. Number one, the most obvious and blatant is the fact that Donald Trump was elected president of these United States. And turned, you know, American politics into, kind of like a bad version of The Godfather at this point. I mean, it's pretty crazy. So there's that. On the flip side of it, there's also the amazing movements that have grown out of resistance to Trump. And, you know, again, there's a lot of, you know, we can mock the kind of hashtag resistance stuff about, you know, feel good liberals who just want to say they're against Trump, but, you know, just want to get back to their brunch, as they say. But there was some very, very meaningful resistance that took place. And I have to say, Digby was on the Majority Report earlier today. So today's Friday. I should say that right up front. Today is Friday. It's December 20th. And Digby said something I think it was really important. She's Heather Parton, if you don't know. Heather Parton, she's a phenomenal blogger and analyst, kind of was one of the, you know, key folks who kind of emerged with the rise of the blogosphere as being one of these kind of political reporters and commentators who was able to kind of go around the mainstream media and kind of provide a sense of a certain kind of analysis for progressive left causes. And but anyways, Hullabaloo is her blog, but she's really good. But anyways, she said she was doing this kind of reflective thing too as well. And one of the things that she said that really resonated with me personally was that 10 years ago, not exactly 10 years ago, but almost 10 years ago, was the launch of the Occupy movement, right? A matter of fact, is the launch of this Raging Chicken Press. It was 2011. And that came in the wake of the Tea Party victories in the midterm elections in 2010. And then we saw Scott Walker in Wisconsin start the right-wing assault on labor unions, on the public sector, on healthcare, on, I mean, you know, you name it. The wish list of the Koch brothers is what Scott Walker really started out there in Wisconsin. You know, there's a reason why there's people like John Nichols and so on who talk about that moment in Wisconsin, saying it started in Wisconsin because it's that was where it resonated. But even before Wisconsin, there was the Arab Spring, right? And in many ways, the occupation of the state capitol building in Wisconsin echoed that kind of occupation that was taking place in Tahrir Square in Egypt. And, you know, there's a complicated relationship between the kind of occupations that took place in the West and the occupations that took place in the Middle East and North Africa. But be it as it may, it's almost 10 years ago now. And the point that Digby was making was that we have two presidential candidates right now, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, who are openly talking about Medicare for all. They're openly talking about free college tuition. They're openly talking about universal programs to fundamentally revolutionize the status quo, at least. And the thing that she said is that that may seem like a long time, especially to younger folks, but it's astonishing what has happened in 10 years, right? In less than 10 years. And she was pointing to the fact that, you know, when she was growing up and becoming politically active, when I was growing up, when it's, you know, when the Iraq War started, I know there's some of you who probably were not even born yet when the Iraq War started, right? The original Iraq War, I should say. So, you know, there's the idea of talking openly about being a socialist. And look, I grew up in punk rock traditions. I talked about myself as an anarcho-socialist for a long time, right? And I had my mohawk and I had all that kind of stuff. But there was a real sense that you are so far on the fringe for talking about those kind of ideas, even talking about programs such as, like, you know, free college, right? I mean, or talking about everybody should have medical insurance. You were immediately branded like this kind of like communist, and not communist in the way that people are starting to talk about it today, but communist in like the Stalinist Soviet Union oppressive, like, you know, genocidal regime, right? And she reminded me of what it was like to grow up in that experience when it's like you really felt like you were out there in the wilderness. That you know, I gravitated towards punk rock. I gravitated towards those folks who were kind of like marking themselves on the outside as resistant to that status quo, for reasons that I could never even articulate at the time. I mean, other than, you know, that, you know, that's like death and blah, 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 and then consumerism is death and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I could do a whole bunch of stuff, but that's really what it was, is trying to say, you see the shit is just going on around you, and you can't, you don't have a language for it yet. You don't have a way of talking about it, and you feel it, like, in your body. You feel it in your soul that things are bad. And you look around and people are smiling and they're like excited about a new big box store opening up, and they're, you know, going out and buying shit, and there's jingly commercials on the TV, and you know, and you look at people and they seem happy, and in, for whatever reason, you realize, I realize that, you know, or I'm feeling that it's just wrong. But, you know, finding people back then, in the 80s, in the 90s, in the early 2000s, even for that matter, who were, you know, kindred spirits was tough. And when Occupy came along, right, when the occupation of the, you know, the Capitol building in Wisconsin came along, it was a historical break in many ways. And really, a short period of time, historically short period of time, we've gone from having someone like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren even being a legitimate presidential candidate that has the opportunity that may actually get the nominations of a major political party. That was unthinkable before Occupy, before the Wisconsin uprising, before Bernie Sanders' first campaign, for that matter. But Heather Parton and Digby, what she was basically doing is, you know, saying, look, this is the way social movements work. And these are the time frames that we really, really have to be prepared to embrace. Right? That I remember at the time when Occupy took place, it was so amazing. And then so quickly, that like the pundits and even the folks on the left, they turned very quickly to God. I was like, it's a failure. And there was like infighting and they didn't have a plan and all that kind of stuff. You know what? Social movements are messy. But the fact is that the very principle about inequality that Occupy put on the table, that said that things are fundamentally broken, and income inequality and wealth inequality and the kind of the 1%. Remember, the 99%. And the 1%, and the 99%, that is a meme that came out of Occupy. And now it is something that is being talked about as kind of common sense in a presidential campaign. I mean, that's astonishing. And I was really happy to listen to that and hear her say those words today and remind me of that. Because some of that had been going through my mind as I was going back over these old episodes and going after and thinking about, hey, you know, what can we send out and what can we put out over this holiday break? And when, you know, Sean is off doing one thing, I'm off doing another thing. And what can we put out that would be somehow kind of meaningful in a kind of reflective kind of way? And initially, I should say two things. One, next week, I'm going to put out like chapter two of this. Okay. So, it's going to be the happy side, I guess. So what do you say? But chapter one is, the election of Donald Trump. Okay. And going back, and I didn't remember this actually, but, we had been on a hiatus in the podcast for like September, October, November, just like 3 months, in 2016. And there was a bunch of reasons for that. Right. Number one, the beginning of 2016 is when we were rapidly approaching the first ever strike in the history of my faculty union, ABSCUF. Right. I was the mobilization chair, I guess, what do we call it? A strike chair, of that, of the committee. And so I was kind of doing the overall planning of preparations for that strike. Mike Gambone, a good friend in the history department at Kutztown, he was the picket chair, and Mike did like the most amazing kind of logistics job I could ever possibly, like, you know, I don't know, imagine it happening. I mean, he's just an amazing thinker on these things. And then Colleen Fitzgerald, who was our office manager at ABSCUF, and office manager is kind of like almost belittling to the kind of the role that she played in the strike. I mean, she was just incredible in kind of in motivation and kind of thinking five steps ahead of what was going on. Amanda Morris was our newly elected chapter president, who, you know, was her first main job was like preparing for a strike before she could even get her, you know, feet on the ground. I mean, all these things were going on. And in the beginning of the fall semester at Kutztown in 2016. And then obviously there was also a presidential election that was gearing up, right? So our strike happened on October 19th, and I'll always remember that because that was actually my birthday, right? So the strike happened on October 19th, 20th, and 21st. It was a three-day strike. And then in less than a month, there was the election, right? So that was a legitimate whirlwind in ways that I hadn't appreciated how fast all that stuff happened. And after the election of Donald Trump, it was like a gut punch. I mean, it was a gut punch in a way that kind of silenced my soul for a while. And what I mean by that is just kind of just it made me feel dead. Right? That this was just not real, you know? And I know I was not alone in that. I mean, talking to people after that, it was like that. It's the way it felt to walking through the halls of my workplace at Kutztown. So anyways, that's the backstory in terms of, you know, so we had a strike that was happening in, that I was helping organize, and there was an election that was going on. I was doing organizing for that stuff. And so Sean and I had decided we're going to take a little break. We just couldn't handle it. There was too much going on. And then doing the podcast was just, you know, we had just started it, I think, you know, what, 6 months before, 4 months before. And it was just, we didn't have enough of a routine yet, and weren't going enough. So we needed to just stop, right? We needed to just stop for a bit. So the episode in December 14th, 2016 is the first episode that we had as we're coming back from that hiatus. And it seemed like a really important marker. And in listening to this, and you'll hear me talk about this, and you'll hear Sean talk about this. And I had been like, in my head at the time, I felt like I was, you know, sounding like a nut job, because I kept on saying that I do not trust the polls. I think Donald Trump is going to be here. I think people are wrong. I'm hearing these like voices that make a lot of sense to me. I'm talking to people. I'm seeing what's happening in my neighborhood. And I'm like, I don't believe that these polls are accurate. But then when it got up to the election day, the day before, I can remember this like distinctly. And like, I said, okay, I guess I'm just being paranoid. It seems so clear. Everybody is on board. Even some of the best polling, everybody tells me this is the best polling, is, you know, saying that Hillary Clinton is going to win in a landslide. And then the election day comes and the devastation happens. Right? It's just like, I'm like, shit. And the worst thing, and I think I talk about this on the podcast, if I remember right, and the worst part of it, well, there's so many with the worst parts of it, but the thing that hit me most immediately is having to tell my daughter, right, the next day that Hillary Clinton was not going to be the first woman president in the history of the United States. And to see the look on her face, because she asked me, because she had been following it, she was interested in this. She was, at the time, she must have been five, right? And already that, and then, yeah, and that was something. So this is that first day. And I wanted to pick this one not to kind of be like, you know, like the downer before the holidays, but as a kind of reminder of kind of how monumental that really was at a visceral level. And the reason why that, you know, if you're feeling a little exhausted, if you're feeling emotionally drained now, and like there's a reason. Right. It's not just the Twitter shitstorm that Trump put out last week. It started with that campaign and then with that surprise victory. So there's that. So that's kind of what you're going to be looking at here. And are listening to today, if you're kind of, you're still listening at all right now. But that's why I chose it. So the one next week, I'm actually going to look forward to when we start to see the rise of the Women's March and Indivisible, and we start to see all this local resistance. And I've got several different candidates there, and I'm trying to figure out which one to kind of put in for next week. But so there's the hopeful end of that, right? As the kind of like, as that reminder, and as much a reminder for me as for everybody else too, as well. And this process has been really, I think, both what Digby said earlier today and what kind of sorting through some of these past episodes has really reminded me of some things. And it reminded me of the hope that I had when I started Raging Chicken Press and we started the podcast Out to Coop. That idea was that, look, there is a gap. There is a huge gap. And that gap is in, there's a lack of a progressive media infrastructure in the state of Pennsylvania and across the country. But this is where I live. And, you know, my friend Rick Smith from the Rick Smith Show, Rick had been, you know, has been championing that cause and shouting that from the rooftops from as long as I've known him. And here we were trying to do the same thing. And we felt that degree of possibility. But I'll be honest, is like, you know, as people have moved on, they've gotten jobs elsewhere, they're no longer writing for Raging Chicken and things like this, it's been hard to sustain that sense of hopefulness. And now Sean is, you know, as we've talked about before, Sean has not been writing in Raging Chicken as much because he's got kind of contract jobs and things like this that he's doing, and that's his time stuff there. And I've kind of let things slip a little bit, I gotta say, right? Because I've been exhausted. And I should say, because also in 2016, which I didn't know at that time, is that I had sleep apnea, right? So I was absolutely like wiped out all the time. And I finally got that taken care of last year. I'm like, hello, this is what it looks like on the other side. But anyways, that's just whatever, a minor thing. Well, not minor for me, but for you. I mean, it's just, what do you care? But so I started looking back at it, and I started remembering what the mission of Raging Chicken was from the beginning, and that was to build out connections. And that's, you know, going through this process has encouraged me, like it felt, maybe I want to reach out to other folks. So I began to start reaching out with some different organizations again and different people again to kind of say, hey, let's build this out. Let's do this, right? Let's build out our infrastructure in a conscious way, right? Let's have a movement media. Let's have a place where it keeps the media and the movement, the media. That's not just a slogan, right? But that we can do this, you know? And then as I started thinking about this stuff too, as well, I started thinking about, man, you know, I used to live in Lehigh Valley, right? And Lehigh Valley, as if you've listened to the podcast, you know that Lehigh Valley in my mind is the future of Pennsylvania. And I love the Lehigh Valley, right? For all its complications and for all the kind of difficulties that people have been, that in my mind is the future of Pennsylvania. And I've got stories I can tell you about why that resonates just at a kind of visceral level for me when I was a kid. But at the very base, like, you know, I love Lehigh Valley. What can I say? And when I moved from Allentown, when my wife and I moved away from Allentown and moved into down to Perkasie, that was really hard, right? It was hard because I felt like I was leaving a place that I felt at home in. And now I live in a place, you know, it's a nice place. I got, you know, my neighbors are all right, and they're, you know, got good neighbors, got bad neighbors, whatever. But it's a rural place. It's not a place that I feel as connected as I did to in Allentown, right? It just is what it is. But I've always been drawn back to that, right? And, you know, so I started thinking about this. And my wife comes home today and she tells me, she says, hey, I just heard there's this Lehigh Valley Podcast Festival that's coming up. And so I said, oh, you know what? I think I texted up. And I looked at this and I'm like, that's right. And it's going to be the first ever Lehigh Valley Podcast Festival that's going to take place in March of 2020. And I'm like, no time like the present. Went and I fill out that form to put in to try to kind of to get into that festival for Out to Goop podcast. Right? Know anybody in Bethlehem? Right? You listen to this podcast. Know anybody in Bethlehem's working on that? Put it a good word for us. Right? I mean, put the links in that kind of stuff. But I just thought about, man, it's awesome. right? That the people are recognizing that they're building out these podcasts and that, you know, we've got something special here and the Lehigh Valley is going up and coming. And so let's put together this festival, first ever podcast at the Steelworks, or a podcast festival at the Steelworks. Let's do it. So I put in for that. And as I got doing that, I started thinking about, hey, what are some of the other podcasts out there? And I kind of went down this little trail of music podcasts. They were highlighting kind of, kind of independent, local musicians and bands and things like this. And so I listened to some of that and remembered that, oh man, I saw this one band. I saw this one band at the I went to this Planned Parenthood fundraiser kind of a while back. My wife and I did, when my friend Colleen was actually working there. And there was a band that played there, and Small Mess they were called. And I said, oh my God, yeah, look, they were on this little, this mixtape thing or this tape something or other, tape exchange, I think is what it's called, tape swap podcast. And listen to them again. I said, man, I remember, man, I loved the bit that when I saw them, and this is great stuff. And so I'm going to reach out to them and say, hey, man, can we bring in some of that music into our podcast and find ways to mutually work with each other? So that's the kind of things that's been going through my mind lately. So it's a hopeful moment. So even though the podcast that you're going to hear, the episode you're going to hear from 2014 is our first reaction. Sean and I's the first, time that we got back together on the podcast to talk about our experiences there. As much as that's the case, is that what has happened since then in terms of social movements, in terms of building out of stuff, there's a lot of hope there. And that feels good. So anyways, my only hope is that you will have that kind of experience that I had and aren't going to be left with kind of like, oh my God, I got to revisit this crap again. Because there is something there. And I'll just give you a little readout. So this is these are the top line, the first paragraph of the show notes, for that day. So remember this is episode, I think it was 25, I believe. Episode 25 on December 14th, 2016. And this is what I wrote. So Raging Chicken Radio is back. Trumplandia is coming, folks, and we are rebuilding and getting ready for the fights ahead. We have been off air since mid-September, and to say that a lot has happened is the understatement of the decade. And this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, and we go right into it. Right, so very kind of simple, straight to the point. The episode was titled Winter is Coming. We're back talking Trumplandia, normalizing white supremacy, and a new Raging Chicken contributors. So there you have it. So anyways, I hope I didn't kind of dissuade you to hang out by my ramblings here. But like I said, this is kind of that reflective time of the year for me. And I just thought, instead of just doing this in my own head, to share it with you all, because, you all have been part of what's made this all possible, right? I mean, when we made the decision to make this a membership-driven project, instead of, going out looking for ads and all this other kind of stuff and, whatever, it's really been you, right? And for those of you folks who are listening, whether you're been able to financially contribute to what we're doing by going to patreon.com/rcpress, where you become a member, so those $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress. You can do that, become a member, or give us a one-time donation by going to ragingchickenpress.org and click the donate button. Or if you're someone who's been listening to this and has just been sharing it out, right? I mean, because, look, you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a review, right? You can go to, like, iTunes and, make sure you're subscribed to that so you're kind of boosting up the podcast and leave us a review there. That helps get our name out, right? If you're listening on Podbean or Stitcher, leave us the review. Share it out to people. Let people know, right? I mean, there's a lot of you out there that have done that, and that's been fantastic. So, anyways, thank you for everybody, and like I said, we should have at least one more, maybe two, but one more show that's going to be kind of drawing back from the archives. And I hope you enjoy it, even if it's just kind of like, to laugh at us. And especially when you get here to hear the first ones. Ooh, man, we're struggling. Yeah. So anyways, so by the time that I'm back or that I get the little intro, it'll already be past Christmas. So if those of you out there are celebrating Christmas, have a Merry Christmas. And I guess, Happy New Year too? No, we got one show before New Year. So, yeah, So Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Hope you all are kind of doing well. And you're closing out this, you know, this 2019 with that sense of hope that I hope I feel. So anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, kind of signing off on this December 20th, 2019, to leave you with the episode from 2016, December 14th, 2016, Winter is Coming. We're back talking Trumplandia, normalizing white supremacy, and new Raging Chicken contributors. Hope you enjoy it. Hope you had much fun listening to this as I had going through and finding this episode to share with all of you. Okay, I'm out of here for now. See ya! It is December 14th, 2016, and Raging Chicken Radio is back. Trumplandia is coming, folks, and we are building and getting ready for the fights ahead. Man, we have been off air since mid-September, and to say that, I don't know, a lot has happened is kind of the understatement of the decade at this point. This is Kevin Mahoney, still the editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Welcome to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. Sean Kitchen and I are back and ready to take on Trump's suicide squad and the tide of right-wing politics right here in PA. So one of the things I want to remind everybody out there is that you can keep progressive activist media going strong by becoming a member of Raging Chicken Radio. Raging Chicken Media is basically what we're going to be launching. Raging Chicken Media for as little as $2 a month. Our 2016 membership drive is all about preparing for the next 5 years of pull no punches, progressive media in PA. And I'll have to say, I want to shout out right off the top of the bat to all the new members that have kind of joined on and signed on with us. We've probably got it. We have about 13 new members who have joined since we last been on the air. We've had some additional donations that have come in from individuals that's really helped support the directions of Raging Chicken Radio, Raging Chicken Press, and Fight Back Media here in Pennsylvania. We're going to get into that in our second segment today. But for now, I just want to remind you, the easiest way to become a member, you just go to RagingChickenPress.org, click on the Become a Member, click on Become a Member up at the top menu bar, click Become a Member under the Support and Membership tab. Or if you'd rather make a one-time donation, you click Donate under that same tab. And if you're listening on Podbean right now, or you see that big green button up the top that says Become a Patron, click that and you'll be right on your way. So Sean, man, what the fuck? What the fuck, man? I don't know how else to put it, but this is since September, it seems like we are living on a different planet.
Yeah, I mean, I guess an election happened.
Something. I mean, I guess we could call that an election. I mean, that was I guess an election happened.
Well,
an
election did happen. One candidate won by 3 million votes. The other candidate won the Electoral College. And here we are.
Here we are, man, with the I'm telling you, I mean, you know, we talked about this, you know, and I was going back over some of our last episodes and some episodes over the summer. And we talked frequently about the real possibilities of Donald Trump winning this election. And I remember, you know, in September, I went on one of my monologues about how people were underestimating Donald Trump and underestimating the possibilities that there that he could actually take the presidency. And but, you know, frankly, even when we got, you know, a couple days out from the election, I had finally been convinced that no, Hillary Clinton was going to win this election. And that was nowhere near what happened.
Yeah, I guess you could put it like that. I mean, I was convinced I was living in that bubble. I was convinced that Clinton was going to win it all the way. And it wasn't until 12:30 that Wednesday night, or, you know, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, where I I turned off my computer and I went to bed. You know, knowing the worst, like I just sat looking at my ceiling in my dark bedroom for a couple of hours until I fell asleep. And I woke up at 8 o'clock the next 8:30 the next morning. And, it took me about 45 minutes to even turn on my computer or look at my phone to read the worst that happened. Like you knew what happened. And, yep. And I didn't want to come to that reality. And, I still feel detached, numb, shocked about what has happened over the past 6 weeks. You know, it's been 6 weeks now, I guess, 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I'm still, there's still points where I feel just as shocked as I did that Wednesday after the election.
Yeah. I certainly don't think you were alone in that. That's for sure.
It's amazing. I mean, Wednesday after the election, I don't cry at all. I internalize things. I don't cry. I don't let it out. I barely cried when one of my good uncles, who basically treated me like a grandson, passed away of cancer. He was diagnosed cancer and 5 weeks later passed away.
Yeah.
And I like that was a shock to us. And I didn't really cry that much at the funeral. I think I cried more the next day after the election, realizing what has happened and what can happen to me and what will most likely happen to me, losing health insurance and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I cried throughout the day. Like there was periods and I'm past that point of crying, but I'm still like, there's points where I'm still just like staring out into space. Like I'm shocked. like, you know what I mean? I'm numb, shocked.
No, I think I hear you, man. And I, you know, you and I talked a little bit about this yesterday. For me, the election in my mind brought a lot of things into focus. A lot of things into focus. I mean, to echo what you're talking about is that, it was devastating in a lot of different ways that I find kind of comes in waves. And, you know, I've told the story before about how, I did that night, actually. It was probably about around the time that you shut off that computer. I want to say it was around 11 o'clock that night when it was clear that Trump was going to win. And I did a Facebook Live and just was kind of saying, look, man, this is real. And the hardest thing for me to deal with at that time was to have to wake up and tell my daughter that Hillary lost. Or at least lost the Electoral College. We should always continue to remind folks of that. But one of the things that, you know, there was certain kind of clarity that came with it too, as well, is because, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the podcast before, and some people who know me know a little bit about this, but I spent a lot of time over the past year starting a nonprofit organization called the Citizen Media Center. And the idea there was to, the shorthand of it was to kind of train kind of new media stuff, do a lot of kind of consulting work and things like this. And what became clear after the election was that there wasn't going to be time for that. So I've had to rethink that and I kind of rethink a lot of what we're doing at Raging Chicken Press. I mean, it was, and we'll talk more about this in a second segment, but, the clarity that was brought is like, man, this is, we have to be all in on fighting this stuff back, because it really does feel like there's the potential for what Trump is already laying the groundwork for to go in very, very scary places that I've only really practically had to consider in science fiction and things like this before, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I studied, one of my electives I took in class was histories of Latin American revolutions. And, you know, you learned about Chile under Pinochet. You learned about stuff in Guatemala with the Dulles brothers and, you know, really like the beginning of our outward expansion outside of our own borders, corporate, you know, with the Dulles brothers and, you know, all the coups we had in you know, in Latin America and around the world. And, you know, it was just like that and like reading Shock Doctrine at the time. Now it's like those chickens have come home to roost.
Yeah, I'll have to
like
say
those chickens have come home to roost. You know, like one of the things that I, you know, kind of like was I burned myself out over the summertime and didn't really feel like doing any writing, you know, up until maybe the leading up into the strike. You know, that was the first time I did something concrete in a while. And that kind of like re-energized me, but that went away for a little bit. And then, you know, this election has, you know, forced me back into writing. And it's also forced me back into wanting to be an organizer, like, you know, like wanting to actually organize stuff. And, you know, we've been talking about this off the air for a while now. Like, you know, tonight I'm hosting my second meeting out in Harrisburg. The first meeting we had, like, basically this started with a phone call. I called up one of the guys, you know, the one person who's organizing PASCHE students, James Rosansky. He's, you know, he was a Nation writer. And I never realized he lived in Philadelphia until the AppScuff rally out in October. And I kind of called him up that Thursday. I was like, dude, like, what the fuck? Like, exactly like that. That was pretty much the phone call. Yeah. And like, how are you? Like, what are you doing? And, you know, maybe like 6 days after that phone call, I was like, all right, I'm going home this Wednesday and we're going to meet up for lunch. So I drove home, drove out to Philly, met up with him for lunch. And then literally like the following Tuesday, you know, we had this meeting at the Midtown Scholar. We were able to get like 20 people out for an organizing thing, which is absolutely phenomenal. And then we're doing the same thing again tonight. And we're going to be laying out the groundwork for a massive community-wide meeting in January, you know, right leading up into the inauguration. And we're going to be mobilizing around that. And really, like, this was a gut check moment for me. Like,
yeah.
You know, I wasn't able to get involved in volunteering with the election just because of how much my workload and I wanted to do that stuff. But this has forced me to really dedicate a lot of extra time into my week, which is already packed, working 50 hours a week, like 45, 50 hours a week. And this now has me wanting to, you know, stir some stuff up in this area, you know, bring people together and let's start doing some actual on the ground organizing and bringing people together. And, you know, the responses have been tremendous over the past couple of weeks. You know, for central Pennsylvania, which is normally conservative, you know, I've gotten a lot of great feedback from people and people wanting to get involved after the election. So, and maybe this is now a galvanizing moment for us.
Well,
on the left.
I go back and forth on that, exactly that issue a lot, you know, and I think that I'm very, very wary about, putting any kind of positive spin on things right now. And that's not to say that there's not reasons to say, okay, look, maybe there's something that can happen here. That's a very different thing in my mind. Because, you know, I look at, you know, the rhetoric of a lot of the folks, you know, Jill Stein supporters and, you know, the freaking Jimmy Dore line of BS coming out of there, where the idea that, you know, you have to, you know, it's okay if Trump takes over because then the left will then wake up, right? And all that kind of stuff. And just historically speaking, that's not, those are not the conditions under which movements have thrived. If anything, I think that, you know, we're much more back into those first years of the Bush administration or the first years of the Reagan administration, when we saw attacks come swift. You know, I mean, I was there. Like, I was there in Washington, D.C. during the inauguration, for the inauguration of George W. Bush. And because that was for people, you know, who do not remember, right, or were not around, weren't paying attention to politics then, is that that was the Supreme Court nomination of the President of the United States, where Al Gore conceded to George W. Bush in ways that I think he never should have, but whatever. But I was on the front, you know, the front lines of the protests, on the literal barricades as the motorcade came by. And I watched as I was looking down, you know, as the motorcade was coming down and George Bush's car was coming by, I was watching the eggs flying and hitting the car. right, at that point, is how freaking outraged and angry people were at that point. And then what followed was the same kind of stuff we start seeing in the media now. We start seeing a period of normalization, a period of that's going to be okay. And then, you know, people really, really had to dig in. Had to dig in and fight. And you know, we got lucky that time because it was the birth of the blogosphere is when we're just starting to kind of really see kind of independent media taking hold online, and a bunch of aggressive citizen journalists and journalists and bloggers got out there to help kind of build those movements, and people did start to organize, but man, it was a fight uphill. And I really think that, you know, we've got to be in it for the long haul. And the think about that, you know, we're going to have to think carefully and seriously about building a powerful movement, but also kind of, you know, a sustainable structure of political organization and activism. So it's like, you know, the kind of work that you're doing right now, I think it's really important that we all have, you know that this is something that's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to be something that we can just show up for a protest on one day and then go away. I mean, we're going to have to pay attention. We're going to have to invest in our counter organizations and stop this stuff, because man, there's a lot of people in the crosshairs right now.
Right. And like, this isn't going to be a movement. This is going to be a struggle. Like, and I think people need to realize there's going to be a whole lot of struggling going on over the next 4 years, you know, just to get through the next 4 years, and hopefully not another 4 years on top of that. I feel like this is the bombs falling on Allende, referencing Shock Doctrine with Naomi Klein. You know, I feel like we are getting zapped into oblivion right now. We're getting shocked into numbness with what's going on. We have Rex Tillerson becoming Secretary of State. I think that, my opinion, is the most dangerous pick of them all for his cabinet. He's not a statesman. And this is them saying that we will fight over oil for every last drop of oil. We will go to war. And I sincerely believe that Tillerson's pick is going to lead us into another unwarranted, unjust war over oil. And that's just the way I see things.
Let me say something about this. It's not just the war thing. And this is what I've been talking about with his pick. Is that not only are we going to be talking about setting ourselves up for the very real possibility of war, as you're saying, which I don't mean to take lightly, but it's been absolutely 100% clear by this point that we need fast, rapid, decisive action on climate change immediately if we are to avoid really a catastrophic future. And what I see, you know, by having the guy, CEO of ExxonMobil,
who has funded every scientific document exactly against climate change over the past 30 years.
Exactly. And, you know, I look at that as like, holy crap, man. Not only are we setting up for a potential military conflict, but we're setting up for a situation in which catastrophic climate change. I mean, it's setting the stage for it right now.
Not just catastrophic climate change, but catastrophic climate change that leads to a catastrophic collapse in Western civilization. Like, I fully believe that climate change will bring down our civilization if we don't act. And we are marching ourselves to our own demise right now with electing Trump.
Yeah. Well, and let's be clear though, too. Let's be clear. I mean, I think it's going to be absolutely important that we are 100% clear all the time on these matters. This is not just about Trump. Right. I mean, as much as, you know, I hear it scares the crap out of me to hear some of those folks that are on the left that are sitting there and making it just the same mistake that was made during the campaign. That it's going to be all about Trump. Let's recall that this has been a 40-year march of right-wing politics to get to the point where we are today. What exactly we have now, the people who Trump is appointing right? These are not just people that come out of Trump's mind. These are, this is like the dream team of the Koch brothers and the ultra right in this country. It's like, this is, you are putting people in place to virtually dismantle the public sphere in this country, to go after like minorities and immigrants, right? To basically cordon off, to create kind of walled compounds for the billionaire class, and at the expense of everyone. I mean, this is the Republican Party, the right wing of the Republican Party. They got what they have been working for 40 years. And that's the worst part of it, is that at the head of it, you've got an authoritarian figure in Donald Trump, with the chief, like, alt-right strategist, Steve Bannon, in the White House, who is unaccountable.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man.
And one of the things that's scary is, excuse me, you know, we might not have public education in 4 years after this. We might not, we might not have a minimum wage in 4 years. We might not have any basic labor rights in 4 years. Like, there's... these are things that people took for granted. Oh, the weekend. Oh, the 40-hour work week. Oh, you know, a basic minimum wage. Those things right there off the top can be gone.
And that's right.
And you know what? We did this to ourselves. And that's how I feel sometimes. Like, we did this to ourselves.
No, I think that's right. And listen, you know, this is the plug. We're coming up close to a break right now, and but I this is one thing I want to say. Is anyone who's listening to this right now, you know, there's a couple things that are part of my goals for what we do in this podcast going forward, and a part of what we're doing with Raging Chicken going forward. I mean, you just mentioned several things there about education. You mentioned stuff about, you know, minimum wage and things like this. We can point to individuals that Trump has appointed who are going to go right after that. And in the coming weeks, I think we need to spend a little time each day really kind of connecting those dots, really kind of walking through some of these people, so that we know who we're dealing with and we can kind of see the strategy. There's been some really good kind of analysis out there about how to report and how to do journalism and how to report in authoritarian regimes, people who've actually had to do it, like in the Soviet Union and Putin's Russia and that kind of stuff. But kind of some of the challenges there. And part of it is kind of connecting these dots so you can kind of see things and kind of where we're going forward. So that's the first part. The second part is also, you know, look, kind of what you talked about, what you did after the election, you know, we're going to be needing to check in with each other. And we hope that this can be one of these places where we can start to build a community around these issues. Right. I would love it if we can get to the point, and maybe we'll be able to figure this out in the days, you know, the days and weeks ahead, to eventually begin to take phone calls and that kind of stuff as part of the podcast. But, you know, we'd encourage you now. It's like, you know, if you have concerns, if you have, you know, questions that you think you want addressed, that send us an email, right? Send us an email at ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. It's probably the easiest way to get it, the most direct way. We're going to have some other email set up, servers that are specific to this podcast. So if you want stuff to kind of read on the air, you've got some feedback for us, you know, please send it this way. And we'll kind of talk about some of this stuff on the air, because we're going to need to build that community. We're going to be able to build those communities of resistance. And part of that means kind of checking in with each other and finding spaces where we can come together to talk about these things and at least listen to that. And we'll try to do what we can here at Raging Chicken to help support the kind of efforts that Sean is kind of taking place right now, that is doing right now, and other organizing efforts kind of around the state and the region of the country. So anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney. I'm editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk a little about some changes at Raging Chicken Press moving forward, what we hope is going to be some positive changes for the fight back. And we're also going to talk a little about just some of the, you know, specific things that are that we've been publishing and we've been thinking about it, and maybe a couple other things that have happened since we last talked to you. Okay, this is Kevin Mahoney. I will be back with Sean Kitchen in just a moment.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1990. That was the day that 20,000 workers in the city of Fez, in the North African country of Morocco, went out on strike. Austerity measures had hit the country's working people hard during the 1980s. A drought had made the situation even worse. Unemployment rates for those under 21 had soared to higher than 30%. Two labor unions, the General Workers Trade Union and the Democratic Confederation of Labor, called for a general strike. Government officials agreed to meet with the unions to discuss their demands. But the government would not agree to specific wage increases. Plans for the general strike moved forward. It is estimated that more than half of the Fez workforce participated in the general strike. Large numbers of workers in other Moroccan cities also participated in the action. In Fez, bus drivers showed their solidarity by joining the strike. In response, the government attempted to keep bus service going by putting police and soldiers behind the wheel. This angered many of the young demonstrators, and some threw stones at the scab drivers. Armed forces clashed violently with the strikers. The government claimed the strikers started the violence. The protesters pointed toward the police. A fire was started at the five-star Hotel Mirandez in Fez. Other symbols of wealth, such as limousines, car dealerships, and banks, were also damaged. After the 24-day strike, Moroccan officials claimed that two demonstrators had been killed. But human rights groups disputed that number and said 33 had been killed. Many more were injured. Hundreds were arrested. After the strike, the government agreed to raise wages by 15%. Many protesters were tried for their participation in the demonstrations. Some received prison sentences as long as 10 years. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. I'm sitting here once again with Sean Kitchen. And Sean, I think it's fair to say that winter is not only coming, it is here. So we got to be prepared, I think, to dig in for that long winter. Because I'm telling you, man, there's freaking White Walkers all over the place.
So is it a regular winter? Or is this going to be like a nuclear winter?
You know, I've heard there's times winters have lasted for 28 years. So, you know, we'll see. Or at least, you know, we might have a short 2-year winter, a longer 4-year winter, or God forbid, the winter that lasted 8 years. So, we shall see. I mean, a lot of that's going to depend on kind of what we do. So, in that spirit, what I want to do is I want to tell people a little bit about some of the changes that we've made at Raging Chicken Press and how I've personally and also Raging Chicken, how we've kind of redirected some of our resources to kind of respond to, you know, the climate that we're in right now. It's not a mystery that most of Raging Chicken Press and Raging Chicken Radio is funded by yours truly. But I've been pleased, like I said at the top of the show, that we've had a number of new members come on. We've had a number of people make one-time donations to us to help support what we're doing. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that because that's allowing us to do a lot of really cool things. The number one, the most important, I think, shift, and you know, we've been working in this direction for a long time. It's been our goal, but I think now it's now or never. So one of the first things that we're doing is that we brought on a team of what we're calling regular contributors, and Raging Chicken is going to be able to kind of pay our writers, not a whole lot, not a whole lot to at least to start. It's going to pay our writers each month, right? So we're calling it like a one-time stipend at this point, right? And I'll just be as transparent as possible, which is going to be like $50 a month, right, at the start. As we build our membership base, we want to be able to kind of fold that back into our writers. The idea is that it's not a sustainable model. You've heard me say this 1,000 times on Raging Chicken Radio. It is not a sustainable model to depend on volunteers and people's free time to run any kind of progressive media infrastructure or organization for that matter. I mean, you need some way to kind of sustain what you're doing. So, and that includes writers, right? I don't take any money from Raging Chicken Press. I want that to be, you know, so far we've had money that has supported our streaming, our web space, upgrades to our security. We've been able to purchase some equipment. Sean's got a computer out there, was able to support a move that he made out to Harrisburg. But it's been, you know, it's been supplemental and it hasn't been enough. So this way we hope they're regularizing this. And as part of that, we brought on We basically have a team of six writers and contributors right now to Raging Chicken. One of the regular contributors, that's of course Sean Kitchen. Also Seth Goldstein, who's come on. And Seth is not only a contributor, but brought Seth on initially. I met him at a WordPress meetup, a WordCamp Lehigh Valley, actually. And he's actually donated a bunch of his time as a tech consultant to Raging Chicken. So we brought him on as a paid consultant to help us with the tech stuff. That was especially after Sean, one of Sean's articles on Trump supporters got hacked and shut our site down for a few days, became very clear that we're going to need to basically harden our site to make sure that we don't get hacked. So that's Sean and Seth. Lou Ryan has come on. You've probably seen some of her work already. You've been checking out Raging Chicken Press. She's got a couple articles up there. She's actually wrote for us before in the past, but now we brought her on as a regular contributor, and she's doing some awesome work, and she's out in Pittsburgh. Karen Faridin, who a lot of you are going to know as the founder of Burke's Gas Truth. Karen has been a tireless advocate of anti-fracking stuff in the state of Pennsylvania and around the country.
Might I just jump in real quick?
Yeah, please.
I know Karen for when I was in college for a few years, and the work she's done in Berks County is tremendous. And I just want to say I am glad that she's on here with us. She's doing a bunch of stuff statewide against fracking right now. And she is one of those tired – she doesn't get tired of her advocacy work. She burns the midnight oil, even being older than both of us. One of the things, stories I know with Karen is one of the organizing meetings we went to with Burke's Gas Truth while I was in college was stopping a pipeline going through some parts of Berks County. And she laid out a plan to go to every single borough council meeting in a month and have people from Berks Gas Truth there to stop a pipeline to go through in Berks County. And like, they were successful in doing that.
No, absolutely. I mean, Karen, that's why, you know, when I reach out to Karen, was for exactly that reason. We want somebody that's going to be focused really on these issues. And what Karen, I think, brings to the table is not only the kind of like tireless advocacy and organizing that you're talking about, is that Karen is someone who's kind of well-versed in the nitty-gritty of the kind of the policy debates, and she knows the players, the insides out. So bringing that to Raging Chicken, I think, is going to be really important. And just to give you an example of the impact of bringing her on is that, you know, just yesterday she published a piece on Raging Chicken Press, but she was able to use those Raging Chicken press credentials basically to get on the press call with the EPA about the release of their latest report. So having her is going to be a huge asset for here. We've also brought on Nicole Halberg. Nicole's first piece just came out yesterday too, as well, on Raging Chicken. And Nicole's she wrote this piece called "Man, the streets aren't safe." And it was a really visceral response to initially her friend getting harassed on the street, getting street harassed, and then talking about this perpetual, really kind of daily violence and threats that women are going through. And her just, you know, rip-roaring piece. Please do check it out. I mean, it's this piece has still stayed with me since she published it. And then our newest contributor, who's not as any, doesn't have anything up on Raging Chicken yet, is a woman by the name of Evelyn Henry, who I've kind of known a little bit for over the course of the past few years. But Evelyn's going to be bringing her voice to the table too, as well. We're also bringing on what we're calling a featured bloggers. And you may have seen Steven Singer's pieces. He blogs over at Gadfly on the Wall, and he covers education policy and stuff like this. Steven is coming on as a featured blogger here at Raging Chicken. We hope to kind of add some additional people. So part of what's going to make that possible, though, is going to be increasing our members, increasing the donations that we bring in. So, for example, we have enough right now, right, of kind of a fairly steady revenue coming in between my contributions and our members' contributions and donations to sustain those people that I just talked to you about, right, those four, each month for the rest of the year. Right. So, and that's awesome, but that's at a $50 a month level. Right. So what we want to be able to do, we want to not only increase payments to our writers, but we want to bring more writers on. And my push right now is going to be, ideally between now and, the Christmas break. I'd love to see five new members. If we had five new members, we can afford to bring one more person on board in the short term. And that's going to really help us toward our goal of making that even more sustainable. So we're doing this and kind of making this shift in resources precisely because, precisely because we need to. There's no other doubt about it. I mean, it's buckled down and we got to get to work now. And we're going to need people who are going to report on what exactly it is going on in the progressive and left communities in this state and beyond. So that's also good. The other thing I'm going to be doing, I'll talk to a little bit more about this next time on the next podcast, but I think I'm going to bring on another guest host for the sit down, which is the other segment on Raging Chicken Radio, to do interviews at least kind of once or twice a month. We're kind of working out some of the details on that now. But we'll see. So we're going to look for those changes coming forward. But this is why I can't emphasize enough that we need people like right now, right? As you're listening to this, right? Just go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the support and membership tab and click on become a member. You can become a member as little as $2 a month. We're encouraging people to come in at the $5 a month. That's what we really need. $5 a month commitment for membership. Really, it's like, you know, the price of a beer or two, right? I mean, come on. So we're not asking for a lot here, but it could make a huge difference to supporting us. If you're not ready to become a member, you can go to, again, support membership tab, click on donate. You can make a one-time donation to Raging Chicken Press. And that's going to be, it's going to what we need to kind of sustain ourselves in the future going forward. So, we also have a link up there too, as well. You can buy our shit from the store, man. You go in the support membership tab. We got the click to the store there. We got some t-shirts and things up there. And I've got a bunch of things I'm going to be designing, for our fight against, Trumplandia. So that's where we are, man. And Sean, and so I'm just curious your take on the direction of Raging Chicken and bringing on these more writers moving forward.
I like it a lot, actually. Let me just say one of the things I've done personally over the past month is I've upped my memberships and I've reestablished my memberships to a few progressive podcasts that I've listened to. I became a member of the Young Turks when Cenk Uygur almost beat the shit out of Alex Jones at the RNC, mm-hmm. which I would have loved to have seen happen. I would have doubled my membership if that would have happened. And I'm sure a lot of people there would have, but also becoming a member of stuff I listen to not as frequent, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not on a weekly basis, like Pac-Man. I think David Pac-Man's doing a good job. And also with the Majority Report, I listen to that on a daily basis. And my opinion is one of the best political podcasts out there. And, I've reestablished those memberships, that, you know, I've cut over the past couple of years due to inactivity or due to financial stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm very hopeful in the place where the direction we're going. It's nice having a well-versed group of writers, diverse group of writers as well on top of that. And it's going to be interesting to see where we go. I've liked the stuff that I've, the stuff that's come out over the past couple of days, the first round mm-hmm. of articles from the new writers is excellent. And, it's going to be, it's going to be something that can build our website to something that influences us on the state level.
Yeah, I really
hope so. And it's also going to be able for us to actually hold people accountable, and also not just people, but hold media outlets accountable too for normalizing, racism that we're going to be seeing with Trump coming up.
This is, I mean, you just published a piece on this, right? I mean, about the pistachio girl down in Philadelphia, aimed right at that whole idea about the normalizing of white nationalism.
Exactly. I think the story popped up over the summertime. Will Bunch, I think, wrote about it back in like August or September, when this girl was out protesting or basically shoving a camera in the face of a bunch of anti-fascist groups outside of the National Policy Institute, which is a white nationalist organization in DC. They're not mm-hmm. the alt-right. These are racists. These are white supremacists. These are white nationalists. Mm-hmm. This is exactly who they are. I personally am one of the people who have downloaded the extension to whenever the Google Chrome extension, whenever alt-right pops up in my computer, it actually changes it to neo-Nazis. And it actually has done it in my article a couple of times when saving and reloading a screen. whenever I had alt-right in there, it actually changed it to neo-Nazi. So that's a good thing, seeing that happening. But so she was down there. This person's name is Emily Yukas. She worked for Aramark at the Citizens Bank ballpark. And she's a bit out there. I've seen her cartoons, very vile, disgusting. But it's my opinion that's her freedom of expression. And with art, you can express it with any way you want. As long as it doesn't cross the fine line, in my opinion, when it comes to race or far right politics. So she became famous within the white nationalist movement for becoming a white nationalist over the past year. And she used her brand as Pistachio Girl. You know, she hawks pistachios at the ballpark as a way to widen her white nationalist credentials. She's been featured on TV a bunch of times, especially during commercial breaks. The TV loves putting her on. She had a hat on in the summertime, which said "Make Phillies Great Again," which I thought was good. I want to get a hat that says "Make Punk Rock Great Again," because I feel like those are the times we're going in. But she got fired from her job for saying extremely racist shit online. And, you know, I feel like there's a fine boundary between that. But so she was fired for her job from her job for this, from Aramark. And the Philadelphia Daily News or the Philadelphia Inquirer thought it was a great thing to write an op-ed about this. They called her firing understandable, but a hard pill to swallow. And they compared it to the Phillies were batting 500 in the offseason. You know, they're using the baseball analogies here. Hey, John Kruk is back, you know, 300-pound, overweight, fat, beer-bellied first baseman who's a fan favorite. I remember watching John Kruk in the 90s and absolutely loving him and the mullet and his attitude. And is like, you know, great person, great fan favorite, to the firing of this person over political speech. I felt like her firing was right, especially after listening to maybe like 3 minutes of an interview she gave and how she was, you know, saying that the books inside her school library on Hitler and World War II were kosher. You know, like, instead, like, where do you hear that saying at? Like, you know, connecting those dots, extremely anti-Semitic remarks, extremely racist remarks. And frankly, I think she should have been fired. The Daily News decided to call this a free speech error, which, in my opinion, is a disgrace on their part.
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting. It's like, I think that I think this case is bringing up exactly some of the really naughty problems that we're going to have to navigate. I mean, look, you know, I'm, you know, strong supporter of the First Amendment, free speech, all this other kind of stuff, right? And recognize the importance of basically having people be able to say things that are even vile and disgusting and disagree with, right? And that's something to kind of protect. But what's that threshold, right? I mean, what's that threshold where you're talking about going so far past valued norms that we have to step in and say no? And, you know, again, I could see from the Phillies perspective, okay, you know, it's not just that she's out there saying these things, but she was also promoting herself as the Pistachio Girl as she was promoting these white nationalist stuff. So, I mean, an argument could be made at that level that she was actually corrupting the brand of the Phillies or whatever like that. I mean, you know, that, but, and it's a private company and all that. There's a whole bunch of issues like that. But I think that we're going to, that this is going to be important that, we don't just fall to easy answers to this stuff. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, do we want to ban people for saying things we don't like? I mean, that's a path that I do not think is good, because then eventually it's going to come back, and I guarantee it'll come back and to bite us in the ass kind of down the road. But at the same time, is that, well, not everything is speech. I mean, if you're talking about kind of organizing a political movement that is bent on, like, oppressing,
sterilizing.
Yeah. I mean, some of the stuff that comes out of this woman's mouth is just unbelievable. And I should say, and it's not just this woman, right? I mean, let's be clear. It's the attachment to a particular movement. It is now occupying our White House.
Right. So, and also one of the things where I, you know, made this pivot towards the end of the article is saying that, yeah, like she's, you know, like the people at the Philadelphia Inquirer live in this bubble. You know, the journalists live in this bubble. You know, I live in a bubble. The people on the left live in a bubble, and the people on the Trump live in their own bubble, mm-hmm. like where facts don't matter to them because, and they're more interconnected with themselves in their own bubble. They literally walled themselves. They built a wall between themselves and everyone else. You know, like a physical wall. There's a physical boundary there, and she might not have a great influence on the general population, right? Mm-hmm. Like. You know, but she has a tremendous influence within people within her bubble. And these aren't savory people that she's influencing. She's influencing white nationalists. She's influencing neo-Nazis. Her words can have direct actions that hurts or kills people. You know, well, like that, that's where, like, you know, that's where, to me, like, that's where that line is drawn. You know, her words and her side, her bubble can actually have physical violence on people outside of that bubble. And I admit, I accept the risk that blogging, you know, doing this type of writing could potentially get me fired for what I do and for what I say. But I feel like her speech is considerably different than my speech.
Well, and that's what I mean, that these are not... Well, that's what I mean. These are naughty questions, because it's like, then, you know, this is what I was thinking about on the way home yesterday. There's this, it's actually this podcast that actually you turned me on to called The Pub, right? And talks about public radio broadcasting and a bunch of issues. And the latest episode, we were talking about kind of journalistic norms and how you cover the quote-unquote alt-right, how you cover the Trump presidency, how you cover some of these kind of people in there. And there was a disagreement back and forth between the host of the show and another NPR, a former NPR correspondent. She was now a consultant. But what was interesting about the conversation and why this matters here is because as the conversations got more abstract, right, the farther we got away from actual people, the more likely it was in that conversation, from my reading at least, the more likely it was that we're going to justify protecting and normalizing to a certain degree this extreme right shift that is taking place.
Right.
And I have to say is, like, you know, I've been reading a lot of stuff on there's been some really great pieces in Time magazine, had a good piece on how to report during under an authoritarian regime. There was a woman whose name I'm escaping right now. She's a former journalist in Russia who talked about, you know, the pressures of reporting in a kind of context where you have the strong man or the authoritarian regime. And how important it is for journalists to be on the side of democracy, not just abstract professional codes. And that is going to put journalists in a very, very difficult position. And it's a position too bad. It's, you know, going to be going back to the old labor sayings of which side are you on? I mean, at some point we got to say, like, are we going to defend particular kinds of values, or are we just going to stand by and watch the whole thing go by? And it really concerns me. So, you know, this is my dilemma right now. My dilemma right now is to say, okay, you know, I want to protect First Amendment stuff, but also we're talking about real consequences to real people. And in my view, people come first.
And one of the things that, like, really put me off with this op-ed that came out, I think goes to what you were saying. I'm trying to find the remarks. One of the problems, basically they're saying that she was just a worker who was spouting her personal political views, and she shouldn't have been fired for that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that line right there is normalizing racism, normalizing white supremacy, normalizing white nationalism 101. Like, she's just, you know, someone who's just spouting her own political beliefs. Just leave her alone. Like, that right there normalizes it and makes that acceptable in greater society.
Well, see, here's where, this is where I think it's got to be more pressure against that, though, because like on the this is what I mean by that is like, okay, it's so follow it through, right? Then therefore, right, if somebody so that we should be able to fire people for their political views, right? So that's the consequence of what you just said, mm-hmm. right? And but that's different from what we were talking about a few minutes ago, which you were saying a few minutes ago, and you're talking about having to take it outside of that one explicit exchange, right? Between, you know, okay, should you be able to be fired for your political views? If we're talking about the connection of those political views to a movement that will have and has already had political consequences and material consequences for real people, right? And she's using the platform of being like the Phillies pistachio girl, whatever this might be, as a means to normalize that move, then we have to come up with an alternative reading of this stuff. Because I don't like the equation that says, hey, you know, you have your political views, so therefore you can get fired for them if the boss doesn't like that. I don't like that scenario. But I also don't like the scenario where we're talking about normalizing white supremacy.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've gotten some blowback from people in the labor movement on that issue, and I said that she works in a closed union shop, mm-hmm. right? The Philly ballpark.
Is she a union member?
I don't know, but she's certainly protected, right?
She's protected under the contract, sure. But you know, just curious. I was just curious if she was a union member.
I don't see that coming out, but I mean, she is granted the due process that unions have to give their employees.
Right.
You know, so if felt like she was slighted in any way, she has that at her disposal. And the union is obligated to fight for her.
Right.
Over that. By law. Is she going down that route? No, she's hired her own personal attorney, mm-hmm. which, you know, she could have saved a whole lot of money in order to do that.
No. This is going to be a windfall for her. Are you kidding me?
Oh no.
She is pursuing this course of action precisely because she's going to
become rich.
Filthy freaking rich for this.
Yeah. It's exactly where she's going. She's going to become rich off of this.
Yeah.
Because why? Because the people on that side of the movement actually funds and helps out those who are slighted.
That's right.
Unlike those who are on the left.
That's right. that's where we are, folks. It really is where we are. Well, listen, we're coming up on yet another break. And, you know, I have the feeling that, you know, Sean and I have had stuff just kind of been bottled up here for since we've been on a break for a while. And I should say is one of the reasons why we had to take a break is that Sean's work schedule went crazy. And if you remember, one of the last times we talked here, it was Abscuff was in its contract negotiations. And sure enough, as probably everybody knows at this point, we went on strike. And I was our local strike chair, our mobilization chair, and that just kind of took over my time. So we haven't had a chance to really kind of bat this stuff out in this format. So but there's going to be plenty more coming up. So listen, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with a kind of short outro, and then we're going to get back to business, folks. Get back to work. All right. This is Raging Chicken Radio. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be right back.
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 5 years, we've brought unapologetic progressive activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive citizen media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new sustainable models of journalism, and frankly, no one's going to do it for us. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a good beer or a cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support, and keep up the fight.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. Back again with Sean Kitchen. We're back in the saddle after a little bit of a hiatus, after a crazy, crazy several weeks. But here we are. So, as you know, at our final little outro segment, Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast, we like to talk beer. We like to talk kind of cool stuff like this. And I had to say, I'm not in the most festive mood today, nor have I been since the election. But we do have some things to talk about. So, Sean, why don't you kind of lead us off here?
So, yeah. In the week since we've been away, I've been, you know, bartending at Pizza Boy. And one of the things I found out over the past few weeks is that bartending is a great, great job to do if you want to become an organizer.
well, there you go.
Yeah, one of the things I found out is, like, I've been able to, like, I think, like, at least a quarter of the people coming out tonight are customers that I've known from where I bartend at Pizza Boy. Mm-hmm. So there's a pretty strong, like, progressive community that comes in there. And it's amazing working at a brewery like that and then actually getting those people involved who haven't want to be involved in who were never involved in politics. Mm-hmm. So, like, one of the kids who I've seen in there a bunch of times, I saw him at a rally in the Capitol over the spring. So I know him from there. We're talking, you know, we talk every time he comes in. He's a great person. So I kind of saw him a few weeks ago. I was like, hey, you want to come out to a thing Thursday night? He's like, yeah. Then he got to me the day. I was like, hey, I can't come in. I got called into work. But I talked to him yesterday or a couple days ago, and he sent me an email. I was like, dude, I am so friggin' excited for this. I am going to bring about like five people with me for this meeting tonight. So, yeah, one of the things I found out, one of those like little interesting tidbits you find out once you get back into like when doing the organizing stuff.
Yeah, no, it's all social, man. It's all social. So you got a beer recommendation for us, Sean?
I do. So over the summertime, we canned, Pizza Boy canned this beer called Frontside Lip Slide.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
It was a massive 10% double IPA. And I'm sure you can attest to this. It doesn't It does not drink or taste like a 10% double IPA. It tastes like maybe a 6 or 7% IPA. So the brewers at Pizza Boy were able to get their hands on some Australian and New Zealand hops. Mm-hmm. And they had the same base recipe or similar malt build for the Frontside Lip Slide. And they put in a bunch of New Zealand hops in there. And, man, it feels like you're drinking a mimosa. Or it's just like drinking apple or pineapple, like pineapple juice or citrus juice. It doesn't even taste like beer. It's freaking phenomenal. So I would definitely recommend to get that if you could see it when you're out in Pittsburgh or Philly or anywhere else in the Lehigh Valley. Those are our prominent areas. Or come in the Pizza Boy and pick it up. I think it's probably just going to be a one-time deal because it's really hard to get your hands on some really good New Zealand hops. So it's
very cool.
Something
very
I would recommend seeking out. And driving out to Pittsburgh or driving out to Harrisburg to get it.
Well, man, I'll tell you, that's a good reason for me. I have to say, one of the things that an announcement because I more than anything else, and then also something that's pretty cool is that if you remember back over the summer, I paid a visit up to in New York State, a little place called Woodland Hop Farm and Brewery. It's this great little brewery, just literally like a bike ride away from where I grew up, and it's just absolutely fantastic stuff. They do farmhouse ales, they do a bunch of stuff. Personal favorites there is it's a little something that's called Black Hole in My Mind, which is actually a brown ale. It's finished with cacao nibs and it was available on Nitro there. That was really good. But more interesting for here was one of some of them I brought back is they had recently bottled it's called LB Lives. It's an English style barley wine and one called No Treason and Adam Beer. And they were both barrel aged and they're in bottles. And you have to cellar them for a year before you can open them up. So that was really cool to kind of bring those back. So mark this day. So kind of a year coming back next year, right before Christmas, I'm going to bring them out. This year, however, for Christmas, we got a real special one. You remember, also back in the summer, this is under the best laid plans rubric. As part of Raging Chicken Radio, we just started a brewcast, and we had Matthew Binyak, who kind of came on, and he's a home brewer. And he was going through the initial stages setting up his homebrew, which is for a Belgian. He had a kind of really strong Belgian strong ale. And the idea was to follow him through that process. Well, of course, all hell broke loose this fall, and we kind of lost the thread of that. But we're going to bring that back because we have a reason to. I've got some great tape of him actually doing some of the bottling and that kind of stuff. And and some pictures of him going through the process, which I have to put up. But most importantly, just a few days ago, I did a trunk exchange, and I was delivered these bottles of the beer that actually we started doing on the brewcast, and it's going to be ready in about a week, and I'm going to open it in a week, and Sean's going to get one of these too as well, and if we get some James out there too as well, maybe we can...
With the Raging Chicken logo on there.
Well, that's my thing, right? And what it's basically going to be called, the whole idea of he bottled this thing, and it's called the Raging Belgian. Right, it's called the Raging Belgian, and it's got the Raging Chicken logo right on the front of it. So, Matthew Binyak, this is a huge shout out to you. Thank you, and I can't wait to open this thing up and see what it's like. So, that's a huge thing. So, that's gonna be a cool Christmas present that's come here. And I think Sean, you're not gonna get your beer anymore. No, I'm just kidding. So listen, everybody. We'll try to get in a show next week as our return before some people go off for Christmas and the New Year's holidays. That little whole season I know can get hectic for everybody, but we do wish everybody a really happy holiday season. And I think we can use a little time, with friends and family over the next several weeks to gear up for the fight ahead. I mean, it's not long before Inauguration Day hits and the Trump suicide squad is going to be taking office. So we got to get on the tail. So, Sean, any final words for the good of the order?
Let's organize. Don't mourn. Organize. To quote Joe Hill.
Yeah, there you go. It sounds like you just fell off your chair. You said that too as well. It's great.
I was trying to lean in.
He just couldn't wait. Sean just couldn't wait to get up and get to that meeting tonight. So he's going to get out there. So if you're out in the Harrisburg area, look for Sean out there. We're doing some organizing with some great folks out there too as well. For me, I'm going to get back. I got a little bit of grading left to do for my semester. And then I got to, go full tilt on kind of building our membership base and preparing for the fight ahead. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. And here we are on Raging Chicken Radio. We'll see you real soon. See you, everybody. We'll be right back.